Today finds us coming to Revelation chapter 17. We are at a pause in Revelation chapter 17 as well as chapter 18. The bowls of wrath have been poured out. We saw that in chapter 16. With the seventh and final bowl of God's wrath being poured on the earth, the Lord at that point would be returning. And we will see that in chapter 19, perhaps next time. So chapter 19 of the book of Revelation would come right after chapter 16 chronologically. With the last bowls being poured out, the Lord's return would occur. Well, before that happens, though, this book has two chapters in which God stops and shows in great detail specifically two items that he's judging. Chapter 17 shows the judgment of the Lord upon false religion. Chapter 18 shows the Lord's judgment upon materialism, or worldliness, if you will. This is very appropriate, because if you think about it, through the history of mankind, the two things that have pulled men away from the knowledge of the truth, away from salvation, away from belief in the God that created them, those two things are false religions and materialism. False religion gives an alternative to the truth, leads men astray, blinds their eyes so they will not see the truth. Materialism accomplishes the same purpose. I always think of materialism when I recall the words of Jesus in Mark 8. In Mark 8:34, the Lord says, "If anyone would come after me," and here he's talking about commitment and salvation, "if anyone would come after me, he'll deny himself, pick up his cross, and follow me." And he talks about then losing one's life in the next verse. What good is it? He says, "If anyone will save his life, hold on to it for himself, he'll lose. But if he loses his life to the Lord and the gospel, he'll be saved." But the next verse, Mark 8:36, says, "For what good is it for a man to gain the whole world, yet forfeit his soul?" In that verse, verse 36 of Mark 8, you see sort of the option. Many men choose to go after the world, gain the whole world, and in the process, they forfeit their soul. Well, next week, we'll take a look at chapter 18, God's judgment upon materialism and worldliness. But today, we look at how God is going to judge false religion. False religion has been around since the beginning, and we're going to see some of that today. False religion will reach its apex during the tribulation time. To me, this fits in perfectly with a pre-trib rapture. Once again, I see the piece of the puzzle sliding right into place. When all the true believers are raptured, if indeed it is a pre-trib rapture, immediately religious leaders across the world, of all the false religions in the world, are going to be looking at each other. They're going to note that somebody's gone and that they're still there. And I think immediately they're going to bring up a deceptive explanation. They're going to all, in essence, start to agree upon how they are the true believers left behind and God cleared out the riffraff, or however they're going to say it. Well, that's going to be a very unifying time. Not only will the false religions all sort of be in the same boat at that time, having missed the ark, they're also going to be used, the false religions of the world, are going to be used by the Antichrist. During the first half of the tribulation, the Antichrist is making peace treaties. The tribulation time starts with a peace treaty being signed by Israel. And the Antichrist is going to be unifying the whole world. He's going to be saying, "Peace, peace." And the first 3.5 years, just about, I think will be a time of unification. The Antichrist is going to be a very shrewd, knowledgeable man and a student of history. And one of the things you glean from history is that if you want to rule an empire, you better unite those people on more than just politics, philosophy, or even economics. And the most unifying area that you can unify a group of people under is religion. That's why Pharaoh had the worship of Pharaoh as God. That's why the Caesar worship started. That's why the kings and queens started to be worshipped as deity. If you can combine politics, religion, and economics, and unite people all along those three fronts, you'll have a solid, unified group. And that's what the Antichrist is going to use false religion for in the first half of the tribulation time. Well, with that in view, let's go to Revelation chapter 17. One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls, now that's a reference to the seven bowls of wrath that we just saw poured out in chapter 16, one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and said to me, John, "Come, I will show you the punishment of the great prostitute who sits on many waters. We're going to find out what that sits on many waters is describing. But note the phrase, great prostitute. The true church is called the bride of Christ. False religion, by contrast, is called the great prostitute. And we see here in verse 1 that this is a description of the punishment, the way God will judge false religion. Verse 2, with her, false religion, the kings of the world committed adultery, and the inhabitants of the earth, and there's that technical phrase for those who reject God's truth and salvation, the inhabitants of the earth were intoxicated with the wine of her adulteries. Then the angel carried me away in the spirit into a desert. There I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was covered with blasphemous names and had 7 heads and 10 horns. This is the same beast that we saw in chapter 13. It's a reference to that confederation of 10 kings that the Antichrist is going to put together. And this woman is sitting on the beast. But you know, that doesn't sound like a safe position to be in. In fact, it sounds rather precarious to be sitting on a beast. And we're going to see that'll be the case. Verse 4 describes the luxury that this woman has. The woman was dressed in purple and scarlet and was glittering with gold, precious stones, and pearls. She held a golden cup in her hand, and then the scene changes. The golden cup was filled with abominable things and the filth of her adulteries. Verse 5, a key statement. This title was written on her forehead. Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of prostitutes and of the abominations of the earth. That statement is the key to understanding this. We're going to go back at the end of this chapter, and we're going to look at Babylon, historic Babylon, because it says here Babylon the Great was the mother of prostitutes. So we're going to go back to the Babylonian Empire and see what there has been discovered about false religions that started in the Babylonian era. From that, all the prostitutes were spawned. All the false religions were spawned. Well, like I say, we'll go back to that at the end of the chapter. Continuing on, I saw that the woman was drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of those who bore testimony to Jesus. I want to stop there and mention something that I mentioned at the very beginning of our study of the book of Revelation. There is symbolic language here. There is vivid imagery throughout this book, and some are confused by it, some are upset by it. Some say, why doesn't God just tell us the clear truth? Why make it into all these visions and mysteries? Well, the beginning of this book said it is the revelation of Jesus Christ. It's the unveiling. It is God delivering clear, powerful truths to us. And I would propose that verse 6 here in Revelation 17 is an example of it. The woman was drunk with the blood of the saints. Now, God could have said, false religion has persecuted and martyred many true believers over the ages. But do you see how much more vivid and powerful this statement of that truth is? This woman representing false religion, she's drunk on the blood of the saints. I even like what was said earlier in verse 2. It says the inhabitants of the earth were intoxicated with the wine of her adulteries. People who buy into false religions, they're like someone intoxicated. They're not thinking right. They're not seeing the truth. Well, anyways, we continue on then. When I saw her, I was greatly astonished. Verse 7. Then the angel said to me, why are you astonished? I will explain to you the mystery of the woman and of the beast she rides, which has the 7 heads and the 10 horns. So again, we see here that this vivid imagery, this symbolic imagery, isn't meant to hide the truth. I like how the angel is sort of upset with John. What's the problem? Why are you astonished? It's all going to become clear. And I'll tell you, that's the truth. We'll see at the end of this chapter. All of this will be very clear by then. I will explain to you, the angel says, the mystery of the woman and of the beast she rides, which has the 7 heads and 10 horns. The beast, which you saw, once was, now is not, and will come up out of the abyss and go to his destruction. The inhabitants of the earth, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the creation of the world, will be astonished when they see the beast. Now we saw that phrase, astonished, in chapter 13. And when we come back over these verses, I'll explain the connection. They'll be astonished because he once was, now is not, and yet will come. Verse 9. This calls for a mind with wisdom. And again, that we get more explanation here. The seven heads of the beast she's sitting on, are seven hills with which the woman sits, on which the woman sits. Now, most people know the one city in the world, it's known as the city built on seven hills. So this is good information here. Verse 10 tells us, though, that it's not quite as simple as that. They are also seven kings. And the word can mean kings or kingdoms. And like I said, when we come back over these verses, we'll explain it. Five have fallen, one is, the other has not yet come, but when he comes, he must remain for a little while. The beast who once was and now is not is an eighth king. He belongs to the seven and is going to his destruction. The ten horns you saw are ten kings who have not yet received a kingdom, but who for 1 hour will receive authority as kings along with the beast. There's that ten-nation confederacy. Verse 13. They have one purpose and will give their power and authority to the beast. They will make war against the Lamb, but the Lamb will overcome them because he is Lord of lords and King of kings. And with him will be his called, chosen, and faithful followers. Now there's a reference to chapter 19. The Lord's going to have those titles on his thigh, Lord of lords and King of kings. And his chosen followers, that's you and I, are going to be coming with him at that point. Well, then the chapter ends with these statements, verses 15 to 18. The angel said to me, the waters you saw, here's explanations of those many waters she was sitting on, the waters you saw where the prostitute sits are peoples, multitudes, nations, and languages. This is a worldwide system. Verse 16, the beast and the ten horns you saw will hate the prostitute. They will bring her to ruin and leave her naked. They will eat her flesh and burn her with fire, for God has put it into their hearts to accomplish his purpose by agreeing to give the beast their power to rule until God's words are fulfilled. There is how God is going to judge false religion. And the chapter ends with verse 18 saying, the woman you saw is the great city that rules over the kings of the earth. Well, with that, there's a link, I believe, to chapter 18, which describes another great city, and that has to do with Babylon the Great as an economic center. And we'll see that next time. But in this chapter, we have false religion in view. False religion, after the pre-trib rapture, is going to be unified. The whole world, all those nations, languages, peoples, are all going to be unified, I believe, under this one false religion. And it's going to be riding the beast initially, but then the beast will hate her, and she'll be destroyed by the beast. That's God's plan for false religion. Well, let's go verse by verse and get clear understanding of all of this. Verse 1 lets us know that this is the punishment of the great prostitute, the punishment of false religion. The Lord has paused in his description of the time of wrath, the end of the tribulation time, to show specifically how he's going to punish false religion. Verse 2 says, with her the kings of the earth committed adultery. You see, the true church is the bride of Christ. We're married to Christ. Repeatedly throughout the Old Testament, the scriptures speak of those who turn their back on the truth, or those who say they follow the Lord God Almighty, but they also believe some other idolatrous teachings and so forth, and false teachings. It's said that they have committed adultery. Throughout the Old Testament, the Lord speaks of his people, his nation Israel, committing adultery with all these foreign idols and so forth. So false teaching is likened unto adultery. And here comes that phrase in verse 2. The inhabitants of the earth were intoxicated with the wine of her adulteries. I am amazed at how intelligent, logical people will reject the truth of Christianity. Christianity has prophecies that give us historical proof. They have the Word of God, the Scriptures. They have the person of Jesus Christ. And it has the eyewitness testimony of millions of believers across the world. You explain all of this to someone, like Isaiah says, come, let us reason together. And you present the picture of the truth from Scripture. And people will just ignore it, turn their back on it. But by the same token, they'll often go to some other false religious group and they'll believe a bunch of strange teachings and so forth. To me, they're intoxicated. They're caught up with the false teaching. Now, at this time in the tribulation period, the first half of it, the people, the inhabitants of the earth that reject God, reject his truth, I think also are going to reject the true understanding of the rapture, the pre-trib rapture, and they are going to be just thrilled at the explanation that false religion comes up with. I personally happen to think it'll be something along the lines of spiritual evolution, We've gotten rid of those Bible-thumping fundamentalists. We're moved along spiritually. We're evolving to a higher period of enlightenment. And they're going to be so thrilled by this. When it says they were intoxicated with the wine of her adulteries, I picture the Israelites going to the worship of the calf idol. When Moses was up on the mountain getting the Ten Commandments written by the finger of God, his nation, his people, turned their backs on him. The one who parted the Red Sea, who brought him out of slavery, turned their backs on him and started being intoxicated and committing adultery. Well, that's how it's going to be in the world at this time. They turn their backs on the truth and they believe a lie. Verse 3, the angel takes John away into the desert to show them the special picture that's going to give more explanation. John sees a woman there sitting on the scarlet beast. And again, we see that the beast was covered with blasphemous names. That was something that was brought out earlier. It is brought out in Daniel's book and in chapter 13. The beast, the Antichrist, is going to deal in blasphemy. He's going to deal in falsehood and lies, and he's going to blaspheme the true Lord Almighty. Now, this beast has 7 heads and 10 horns. It is that worldwide system that we saw in chapter 13. From this confederation of 10 horns, 10 seats of power, the Antichrist is going to derive his power. The woman is going to have money. She's going to be doing quite well. And I really believe it. The first half of the tribulation time, false religions are really going to prosper. This woman is dressed in purple and scarlet. Now, today you'll find some false religions that deal with all these other trappings, and their leaders will have ornate robes, and the colors will most likely be purple and scarlet. Then gold is mentioned, and precious stones and pearls. Very wealthy false religion. False religion through the ages, by and large, has drawn a lot of money from people. But it'll reach its apex at this point. And she has a golden cup. But then we see God revealing the truth. In this cup are abominable things and the filth of her adulteries, all the lies and the falsehood that she's propagating. And then the clear title that God gives her. This is Mystery Babylon, the great, the mother of prostitutes and of the abominations of the earth. And as I said, at the end of this chapter, we're going to go take a look back in history at Babylon. And you'll be amazed at what you see in the false religions that were spawned there. Those teachings that came up in Babylon, the mother of prostitutes, are with us to this very day and gaining more strength each day. Then the matter of persecution, verse 6. The woman was drunk on the blood of the saints. This speaks of vast persecution. Through the ages, millions and millions of true believers have been martyred, persecuted, and killed by false religions. You know, the atheists, the agnostic, they don't go around killing true believers. It's always false religion that seems to be at the heart of martyring the true believers. This woman is drunk on the blood of the saints. Now, that persecution is going to intensify during the tribulation time. I recall chapter 11 speaking of the two witnesses that I believe are going to be around in the first half of the tribulation time. They proclaim the true gospel. They are going to be despised. God protects them by saying that if anyone comes against them, fire comes out of the mouth of the two witnesses and destroys them. To me, that shows you how much they're going to be hated. If these false religious people, these organizations, could do away with those two witnesses, they would. And it's almost as if they try and they bring to bear upon them, you know, like I said, the National Guard or something. But fire comes out and destroys those that would oppose the two witnesses. When the two witnesses are finally killed, and as I said in chapter 11, I believe it's at the midway point, what's the world's response? They're going to gloat over their bodies, refuse them burial, and they're going to start passing presents around each other. Happy Dead Witnesses Day. That shows you how much hate they have for the two witnesses specifically, but for all the others who believe what the two witnesses are putting forth. So this being drunk on the blood of the saints is shown to let us know the degree, I think, that persecution will reach at this point. They won't be able to kill the two witnesses, but I believe heaven will be populated with martyrs. The martyrs, I believe, in the first half of the tribulation time come from false religion. In the second half, it comes from the Antichrist, which again is another form of false religion when he sets himself up alone to be worshipped. So, drunk on the blood of the saints, and then it adds the blood of those who bore testimony to Jesus. They They are bearing testimony as they stand true to the faith right on through to death. Now, John's astonished. He doesn't quite understand it, but the angel says, don't worry, it's going to be clear. Verse 7, why are you astonished? I'll explain the mystery. The mystery of the woman and the beast and the seven heads and ten horns are all going to be made clear. Verse 8, the beast which you saw once was, now is not, and will come up out of the abyss and go to his destruction. Now, as we said earlier, sometimes when you're talking about the beast, you're talking about the whole empire, and other times you're talking about the individual. This statement could be used both ways. When some see the revived Roman Empire coming to power and prominence at this time, they're going to be surprised. It once was, then it went away, and now it's flourishing again. Others see here, though, that particular reference to the beast that we saw in chapter 13 as the individual, and it has reference at this point to his fatal wound that was healed. It seemed to be a fatal wound. He seems to have been killed, and I believe it is tied to an assassination attempt from three horns in Daniel's vision that opposed or were uprooted by the little horn. That once was, then was not, and now is again. That could be in view here too. And I think both understandings are fine. The inhabitants of the earth, verse 8 says, whose names have not been written in the book of life, are going to be astonished by this once was, now is not, then will be. They'll be astonished at the revived Roman Empire and the strength and prominence it has. But I think particularly, as chapter 13 said, they'll be astonished when the individual, the Antichrist, has a fake resurrection. The wounds seem to be fatal, and yet he comes back, and I'm sure he's boasting and saying, I'm invincible, I'm immortal, I am God. And that is what's going to be convincing to the world, those inhabitants of the earth. Notice it says, the inhabitants of earth whose names have not been written in the book of life. In chapter 20, we're going to see that these inhabitants of the earth are going to be thrown into the lake of fire. Chapter 20 ends in verse 15 with the statement, if their names were not found written in the Lamb's book of fire, Lamb's book of life, they were thrown into the lake of fire. So these people are destined to believe the lie and reap the consequences of that. The explanation continues in verse 9. This calls for a mind with wisdom. We are supposed to apply this information. That's what wisdom is. First point, seven heads are seven hills upon which the woman sits. Well, there's one city in the world known as the city built on seven hills. It's clear, it's the city of Rome. This woman is going to be centered in Rome. This false religion is centered in Rome. It's called the city of seven hills, and you can even look up in history and see that they gave names to the seven hills. Verse 10 adds more information, letting us know that the seven heads refers to more than just seven hills. They are also... Now, that also doesn't negate the seven hills. It is the seven hills, the city of seven hills, Rome, but it's also seven kings or kingdoms. The word can be taken both ways. If it's kings, the next statement is interpreted this way. Five have fallen, one is, the other has not yet come. Well, what they do is they say when John was writing this in about 94, 95 AD, Domitian was the Roman ruler at the time, so he's the one that is. They then look back at the rulers of the Roman Empire before him, and they pull out and find five significant ones. The problem is sometimes they don't always agree on the same five significant ones. There were other rulers with all the political intrigue. When one Caesar dies, you would often get someone who would rule for a short period of time and then be assassinated or whatever. So it's a question of, can you find five prominent rulers of the Roman Empire? Five have fallen. One is Domitian. Then the other that has not yet come, but when he comes, he must reign for a little while. That's a reference to the coming Antichrist. And again, he will ride over this confederation that's sort of a revived Roman Empire. Verse 11 continues and speaks of that beast as an individual. He once was, now is not, and is an eighth king. But if verse 10 speaks of seven kingdoms, then we have a little more consensus. And again, the ideas don't conflict with each other necessarily. If you have seven kingdoms, the five that have fallen, when John was writing this, were the Egyptian Empire, the Assyrian, then the Babylonian, the Medo-Persian, and then the Greek. Those were five empires, world empires, that had come and gone. Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greek. The one that is then the Roman Empire at the time of John's writing. The one that will come, that's the Antichrist world system. Now, the beast, it said, who once was, now is not, is an eighth king. So he's coming, and he'll be as an eighth. He belongs to the seven, it says, and is going to his destruction. It's as if he starts out a part of the seventh kingdom. He's in that confederation. But he becomes an eighth, I think, at the midway point when he sets himself alone to be worshipped. So instead of sort of being a Roman Empire, it is the Antichrist Empire, and he alone is in charge. Verse 12 explains the ten horns. But we must turn the tape to side 2.